WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Monday, March 27th, 2017. Boy, oh boy, was that weekend fun or what? Oh, I spent most of it on the couch watching the incredible Elite Eight games, which of course decided the Final Four of this year's 2017 NCAA tournament. We'll recap all of that action, including one incredible game when it comes to two blue bloods of the college basketball world. We'll have a complete recap of the NCAA tourney weekend. We will also chat with a man who witnessed one school's first appearance in the Final Four in South Carolina. Mike Wilson, who is a former Michigan State beat reporter, he is now a South Carolina beat writer at SEC Country. Mike Wilson was there to witness that incredible moment for Frank Martin's troops. Mike will join us later on in the show around the 1:30 mark to talk about that great year for the Gamecocks. And we will also be chatting a bit about the Detroit Pistons as things are getting more and more interesting in the race for eighth in the NBA's Eastern Conference. Will the Detroit Pistons make the playoffs? And of course, we'll have weekend winners for you as we take a broad look at the weekend that was in local sports and beyond. So much to get to. Again, you can listen to us on WKAR AM 870 or FM 94.5. Go to Facebook.com/currentsports, where we are currently live streaming the show, or you can even tweet us at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR _sports. So much to get to. Time's a wasting. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, we start, of course, with the Final Four. The road to Phoenix, Arizona. I know Arizona is going to be very live this weekend. Can't wait for it. When South Carolina takes on Gonzaga in the NCAA Final Four playoffs in Arizona on Saturday, it will be the first time both the seventh-seeded Gamecocks and numero uno-seeded Bulldogs have played their way into the semifinals. Also, the Oregon Ducks, which haven't been in the Final Four since they won the very first tourney all the way back in 1939, will have to outplay the UNC Tar Heels, who were last in the Final Four. Out of all of these four teams, UNC, of course, won the entire enchilada back in 2009. Roy Williams and company, the only blue blood in the Final Four. I got to ask, Isaac, our engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, how is your bracket looking, dude?
Points remaining are zero right now. No points remaining. Points currently, I'd rather not mention.
Okay. What percentile? I'm curious.
I'm about 35th percentile right now. No points remaining, so that's going to plummet even further.
Gotcha. All right, well, Gonzaga was able to beat Xavier 83-59. Then you had Oregon over KU, Kansas, 74-60. And then, of course, yesterday, what a thrilling matchup it was between Kentucky and North Carolina, 75-73, the final of that one. We'll dive into how that game ended in just a moment. And prior to that game, South Carolina did weigh with Florida, 77-70. So I have a complete wrap-up of the tourney weekend in just a moment. MSU baseball, Brandon Hughes belted three home runs as part of Michigan State's baseball's eight-round trips, I should say, in the game as the Spartans top Illinois 17-6 Sunday to complete the three-game sweep over the Fighting Illini. It was MSU's first three-game sweep over Illinois in the series history. And the Spartans' eight homers in a game is the most in the NCAA this season. A national television audience on the Big Ten Network saw MSU hit eight homers. And the Spartans now played at double figures in five of its last six games as part of nine total times out of 20 games this season. The Spartans absolutely on a roll on the diamond. MSU has its Big Ten home opener this weekend, hosting Minnesota in a three-game series on Friday through Sunday, and then March 31st to April 2nd. Friday's series opener is slated for 3:05 p.m., with Saturday and Sunday's games with 1:05 p.m. first pitches. Michigan's spring football game will kick off at 1 p.m. on April 15th. The athletic department announced in a promotional email that the game, which features free admission, will proceed by a men's lacrosse match against Ohio State. Fun time out in Ann Arbor. The game will start at 10:30 a.m. and will, and I should say the first 250 kids attending will receive a lacrosse t-shirt. The spring game will occur in the middle of the spring practice season instead of at the end because of Michigan's April 21st to the 30th trip to Rome, Italy. How cool is that? What a weekend it was for high school basketball. And I want to hone in on one game in particular. After 35 years and 677 dubs, Clarkson's legendary coach, Dan Fife, who is the father to Michigan State men's basketball assistant coach. Yeah, you don't have to do the math there, right? Dan Fife, though, realized his championship dream. The Wolves upset top-ranked Xavier Tillman's Grand Rapids Christian 75-69. In the Class A final for its first ever boys basketball state title. Very cool stuff. A Breslin crowd of 13,251 included Michigan State head coach Tom Izzo, Michigan coach John Beilein, and Oakland coach Greg Campy. Fife now ranks fourth all time in MHSAA career victories. Xavier Tillman, he finished with 25 points, while future MSU teammate Foster Lawyer, that is a name that you are going to get very familiar with in the coming years. Foster is also headed to Michigan State. Foster had 29 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. It's been quite a while since I've seen a point guard at the high school level as good as Lawyer. But the kid is going to be a dynamite player. And he still has one more year left in high school. He's only a junior. Wow, Foster Lawyer. What a remarkable run this season for Clarkson. All right, moving on. Theo Riddick, Detroit Lions. He missed the final month of the regular season last year. He had surgery on not one, but both of his wrists, which prompted his season-ending trip to injured reserve. Two people familiar with the procedure told the Detroit Free Press. Now, they would not go on record because they are not authorized to talk about it publicly. The Lions did not announce Riddick's surgery at the time he went on IR, and Riddick declined to comment on his injury after the season while he was wearing a cast on his left wrist. Now, Riddick is expected to be a full participant in organized team activities later this spring. The Raiders' move to Las Vegas is happening, folks. Yes, no longer will they be called the Oakland Raiders, the Las Vegas Raiders. I have to get used to that. ESPN's Adam Schefter reported the franchise is expected to have enough votes to pass its relocation request from Oakland to Nevada gambling mecca, Las Vegas. A vote is expected to happen at 2 p.m. today as one of the first major agenda items from the owners' meetings. Quote, I think we will have a vote, and I think we will have a positive vote. I think we are in pretty good shape, end quote. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell talking to ESPN's Sal Palantonio. Isaac, you like that move?
hated, actually. I think the Raiders are a classic franchise in the NFL, and I think Oakland, I feel bad for them. They're losing the Warriors to San Francisco. That's a loyal fan base there. Now losing the Raiders. Hated, in fact.
Yeah, I don't like that either. You know, I think the Raiders have historical ties to Oakland, and I, when you think about the Raiders, you think about Oakland. Vegas now? It's a money game, dude.
Intransigent fan base, too. You don't know how many people are going to show up every game. That's an untested market. We'll see with the NHL, but NFL is a big endeavor.
We'll see. I don't know. I got mixed feelings on that one. All right, the Detroit Pistons, with their playoff hopes dashed, the New York Knicks can turn their attention to playing the spoiler role in the Eastern Conference this week. That starts today when the Knicks, at 27-46, host the Detroit Pistons at Madison Square Garden. Detroit, riding a three-game losing streak, is one game behind the Miami Heat for the eighth and final playoff spot in the East playoff picture. Now, Detroit is 11-5 on the road and 20-25 against Eastern Conference opponents. It hasn't fared well in its own Central Division either, going 5-15. The Pistons need wins, and they need it now. Going to be interesting to see how this thing plays out in the home stretch of the regular season for the red, white, and royal blue. To the wing wheel, the Detroit Red Wings are coming down the home stretch of the hockey season and will play the Carolina Hurricanes tonight at 7 p.m. The Wings are eighth in the Atlantic Division, and there is no way possible that the Wings will make the playoffs. We all know that. It's old hat now, right? But yesterday marked the anniversary of the Colorado Avalanche and Detroit Red Wings brawl that took place at the Joe back in the 90s. The brawl, which has been nicknamed Bloody Wednesday, Fight Night at the Joe, and Brawl in Hockey Town, stemmed from a previous on-ice incident between the two teams during the 1996 Western Conference Finals. I saw a lot of tributes in local news to that moment at the Joe. And again, just a few more games left. A few more games left for hockey fans out there to say goodbye to the Joe after the Red Wings spent 30-plus years there. All right, a deal which would have included significant bonuses, wage increases, and other benefits for USA women's hockey players was rejected by USA Hockey's 15-member executive committee. A person with knowledge of the negotiations who was unable to speak publicly told USA Today Sports that news on Sunday. Now, the tentative agreement was confirmed previously during meetings in Philly last Monday between the players' representatives and USA Hockey executives. After being informed on Thursday that the original deal was turned down, the players received a counteroffer that they found, quote, unacceptable, end quote, and it was quickly rejected. The IIHF Women's Hockey World Championships set to begin in Plymouth, Michigan on Friday. Unfortunate news there. I really was hoping that one was going to turn a corner, a significant corner. But old habits, folks. Die hard, I guess. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and be a part of the show, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9027. So much to get to. Let's start the show.
I got the best quarterback in the country right here. Greg, best point guard. Way to go, Mo. Your own daughter is on this team, but how do you describe the relationship you have come to have with Morgan Williams?
She's like my other daughter. They room together, they're roommates, best friends. She is very, very special to my family, as all my kids are, but this one's a little bit more because of some other things that have happened. So I am just so proud of her, and what an unbelievable day. What an unbelievable day.
Morgan, we don't often get to see emotion out of you. Why is it pouring out of you right now?
This is for my dad, you know.
Yesterday was the three-year anniversary of losing her dad.
It's just for him.
Morgan, a career-high day for you in the biggest game of your career to this point. What were you feeling out there that allowed this success?
I just know Coach Avery just like, just go play your game. Don't go out there nervous and scared or you're going to get beat. So go out there like the Eagle, he said. So that's what we did. And I just kept fighting and knocking down shots to get my teammates involved. And that's what we did.
This team is not done yet. Morgan, what can this team accomplish?
Right now, we got one game at a time, but I know we're going to Dallas.
We'll see you both there. Thank you so much.
All right, praise the Lord. Go Dogs.
And that is how we start this Monday afternoon version of WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Al Martin. I wanted to start today's Current Sports by, again, we've had a ton of talk about the NCAA men's basketball tournament. And far too often does the NCAA women's basketball tournament go just a bit overlooked. Happens every year, right? We're in men's tourney mode right now, right? Everyone fills out brackets. It's a great time of the year. But, and to be honest with you, I even forget about it every single year. And I happen to, after I watched that incredible UNC in Kentucky game, you know, I hit the gym like I do each and every Sunday night. And while at the gym, I was glued to my television watching Mississippi State. Unbelievable moment as Morgan Williams, and they went through her highlight package. This is what really caught my eye when watching ESPN. Morgan Williams poured in 41 points. Prior to that performance, she had averaged 10.1 points per game. She had scored a combined 11 points and shot 25% in the Bulldogs' three previous NCAA tournament games. So this was a performance that came out of nowhere as Mississippi State went on to beat number one Baylor. So you have Mississippi State now in the Final Four along with Stanford. Both teams are two seeds. And then later on today, you can catch, of course, juggernaut UConn. Geno Auriemma, numero uno UConn, taking on Oregon for a possible chance in the Final Four. And also, how about this? You know, you talk about Oregon and South Carolina, right? That kind of reminds me of the men's basketball tournament right now. South Carolina will play Florida State around 9 o'clock tonight for a chance at the Final Four. Now, let's be real here. UConn will probably beat Oregon. But wouldn't that be something if Oregon... which probably won't happen, but I'm just saying. It's fun to think about it. If Oregon makes it to the Final Four, Oregon, men and women, both in the Final Four. South Carolina, men and women, both in the Final Four. South Carolina is actually favored against Florida State tonight. It's got to be good to be a Gamecocks fan, right? But watching that game, though, and you know, and you hear the storyline there as Morgan Williams, 3 days prior to yesterday, her father, it was the anniversary of her father, unfortunate anniversary of her father passing away. Unbelievable stuff. A 94-85 win, oh, by the way, that went to overtime William, and she's so small. She's only 5 feet five. And she admits that she exaggerates her height, even at that listing, official listing. But, you know, that's one of those moments in sports that you really have to covet, because that's what sports is all about, you know, the emotion of it. And that was just really cool to see. So I wanted to start the show by, you know, just hats off to Mississippi State. Hats off to Morgan William, a young woman who has gone through so much. So much. Putting in a career high 41 points in 40 minutes. She also had 7 assists and no turnovers. Wow. Unbelievable stuff. An emotional moment for her as she talked about her father passing away. And just to see the celebration on the face of Mississippi State. Oh, that was fun. Now let's talk about the men's basketball tournament for a moment here. Oh, boy. Well, my bracket's done. I'm sure that many of you can attest to the same. And the Final Four looks like this. North Carolina, again, the biggest name out of the four here. North Carolina will play Oregon. And then you have on the other side of the bracket, South Carolina to take on Gonzaga. South Carolina and Gonzaga, first time that these two teams have ever been in the Final Four. How crazy is that, right? And the first time that Oregon has made it to the Final Four since the very first year of the NCAA tournament back in 1939. Only 8 teams participated in that tournament. And the Webfoots, nicknamed the Tall Furs back in the day. Funny nicknames, right, for Oregon back in the day. Oregon actually ended up winning that championship back in 1939 in Evanston, Illinois, ironically at Northwestern, a school that until this year couldn't get to the party that it first hosted. So a lot of irony when looking back at that year, right? But the Oregon Ducks, first time since 1939. And, you know, there's two ways. I want to pose this question to you all, because it's one that I do believe has some legit backing and I think should be discussed, because Isaac, you know, and I had this conversation with Brad Walker before we started today's show. You know, when you look at South Carolina, Gonzaga, two teams who have never been to the Final Four, two great stories, right? Congratulations to Frank Martin and Mark Few. Oregon, haven't been since 1939, and then you have the juggernaut in North Carolina. The appeal for this year's Final Four, a lot would argue the appeal isn't a lot. A lot of people don't like that you don't have a lot of big names in this year's Final Four. You know, I sat back and watched that incredible North Carolina and Kentucky game last night. Glued to my television, the drama. It was such compelling TV, but while I was watching it, I couldn't help but take a step back and think to myself, wow, this matchup is happening a bit too early. This is an Elite Eight game. Shouldn't this be a Final Four or Natty Championship game here? So, I've gone on to say this multiple times, I did not like that the committee loaded up the South region with teams like UCLA, Kentucky, North Carolina. I didn't like how they had all of these story programs in one section of the bracket, because at the end of the day, you're seeing matchups that could be potential Final Four or national championship games. So I don't know if for the casual sports fan out there, if you look at the Final Four, look at the teams that are left, two teams that have never been on the competing level of basketball, on the Final Four stage, again, their first time in school history, does that intrigue you at all? Now, I'm also a firm believer in this. If you build it, they will come. If these are good games, people are going to watch. People are going to tune in regardless. I mean, if you're not interested in South Carolina and Gonzaga, heck, if at halftime you get an alert on your phone and it says, close game alert, or tied at halftime, you're going to tune in. It's the Final Four, and it's a close game. You're going to tune in. I'm just hoping, Isaac, that neither one of these games, which I don't expect to be, but I'm hoping that neither one are blowouts. That's all I'm hoping here. I think which game has the most potential to be a blowout here? Possibly North Carolina and Oregon, if anything.
Agreed. And when it comes down to this, there are always two teams that fans of the sport want to watch. You want to watch the underdog, the untested, the unproven, the guys who somehow clawed their way into this position and managed to stick around with the titans of college basketball, such as South Carolina. Look at what they did throughout this tournament. They beat Duke. Nobody saw that coming. I did not see that coming. Beat Florida in dramatic fashion. South Carolina is for real this year. They've got all of these different storylines heading into it. You mentioned their first Final Four. Frank Martin is their head coach. There's so much here with South Carolina that's intriguing. Then you've got UNC, the perennial powerhouse. Nobody questions their legitimacy with this spot in the tournament. They've got such a large fan base spanning across the nation. That's always good viewing. The other two teams, though, the NCAA couldn't have really seen this coming, and they couldn't have wanted it to come either. Gonzaga, non-underdog, non-overdog. Gonzaga does not have a national fan base that's just going to pull in viewers to this game no matter what, not whatsoever. Gonzaga is the team that everybody basically had going to the Elite Eight, dropping out at that point because that's what always happens, or Sweet 16 dropping out at that point. That's what always happens. And they have been around for so long, but they just haven't done that much. And people still question, including myself, can this team actually win a national championship? I don't think they can still. Oregon, they had 600 fans at the last game. Did not fill up an entire section. And great for them. I mean, they overcame all sorts of odds.
For sure.
But to say they're an underdog too, that's a little bit of an overstatement. Kansas was a great number one seed. I was shocked how they played them. At the same time, I didn't think that was the strongest bracket either. I can't help but think that Kentucky is easily, possibly the second best team in the nation. I mean,
yeah,
that is my thought process going into this game. So you're exactly right to load up the South bracket like they did. They intentionally diluted their own product.
They
and
did.
That's just
they
the
did.
Stupidest thing for a committee to do. Hopefully they've learned a lesson. Like you said, hopefully these are good games. People will come and watch them. But if they aren't, yes, there's a lesson to be learned here.
For sure. And our technical difficulties, I tell you, technology sometimes, Isaac. My iPad went out midway through my whole rant before I could even pose the question to our listeners and viewers via Facebook.com/currentsports. But I went on a rant about, again, this is great. You know, you got two teams that have never been to the Final Four. You got one that hasn't been since 1939. Then you have a blue blood in North Carolina. For the college basketball fanatic, yeah, I'm going to tune in and watch this just because I'm a fan of the product. But for the casual sports fan, which is a fan that you have to take in consideration when you talk about your sport at the creme de la creme of its level, the Final Four and the national championship, does the casual sports fan have any intrigue about this Final Four field? I'm curious to know your thoughts. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Again, North Carolina, number one seed. Gonzaga is as well, but Gonzaga has never been to a Final Four. A great program, a great historic program, but they've never been to this level. They've never won a national championship. Roy Williams, this is what he does. The Tar Heels, Final Four bound for the fifth time since Roy Williams took over the program. North Carolina one step closer to avenging its national runner-up finish from a season ago in which they lost a heartbreaker at the hands of Villanova on a buzzer-beating heave from about half-court range. That's going to be on the minds of the North Carolina Tar Heels. North Carolina has won five national titles, most recently during my sophomore year at Michigan State back in 2009. I remember that run. North Carolina is the odds-on favorite to win the title. And talk about experience for NC. All five starters are either juniors or seniors. Joe Berry II, that's another name you want to keep a look on because Joe Berry tweaked his other ankle on Sunday. He had a previous ankle injury that bothered him throughout the season. Look at him very closely here. For Oregon, though, I mean, my goodness, the Oregon Ducks, what a run. And a name that I keep bringing up time and time again is Jordan Bell. He has done a remarkable job of filling in for Chris Boucher, a player who got injured in the Pac-12 tournament, out for the rest of the year. Jordan Bell has stepped up. He was a monster, blocking 8 Kansas Jayhawks shots and collecting 13 rebounds. Tyler Dorsey, another name. He delivered the dagger. Dagger after dagger, I should say, en route to 27 points, sealing that Oregon win over KU. Bell collected 12 boards or more in 4 tournament games, posting 3, count them, 3 double-doubles. And Dorsey averaging almost 25 points per game, shooting over 60%, heck, almost 70% at 66.7. Throughout the Big Dance, he is 17 of 26 from three-point line. The guy has been absolutely unconscious. Great player. And I think Dorsey and Bell has overshadowed the Pac-12 Player of the Year in Dylan Brooks, which has been quite surprising. And how about South Carolina? That suffocating defense. That defense for South Carolina is special. It's something I haven't seen in quite some time at the college basketball level. They don't get tired. They're so pesky. They are completely annoying. Congratulations to Frank Martin and company. This has already been a year in which this Gamecock team has exceeded expectations. That was such a great moment to see Frank Martin, you know, get doused with Gatorade by his players. A lot of tears in the building for South Carolina. And in just a moment, we're going to chat with a man who was actually there to witness that moment for the Gamecocks, and Mike Wilson, who was a former Michigan State beat reporter who is now a beat writer, South Carolina beat writer at SEC Country. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. I want to know, as a fan of college basketball, heck, as I really want to speak to the casual sports fans out there, are you intrigued at all? Or I should say, because I'm pretty sure you are intrigued. It's the Final Four, right? But has that intrigue dwindled a bit considering how the field looks this year in the Final Four, with only one perennial powerhouse in North Carolina in the field? 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Before we hit our first break, let's go to line one right now. We do have Dave from Wyoming that wants to chime in. Dave, what's on your mind?
Well, I guess first, it wasn't for lack of trying that the NCAA ended up with this Final Four. I mean, look where Arizona was playing. They couldn't get the job done. I think Kansas watched Oregon struggle with Michigan, and Bill Self just couldn't get his guys ready. But they set up Kansas for a home, you know, Kansas and Tulsa, pretty much what, home? To my estimation, the only thing that would have been worse is to put them back in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Kansas blew it because I just don't think they were ready. I think it's very difficult to watch those kids. Every one of those Kansas kids is pretty much a blue blood, and they're sitting there telling them, you got to watch out for Oregon. They don't know anything about Oregon. You know, their Pac-12 experience, they've been here in Arizona all year, right?
Right.
So, you know, Frank Martin's team reminds me a lot of some of those Izzo teams.
Don't they?
with that frenetic, in-your-face defense. And actually, Oregon's sort of the same way. I think Final Four-wise, I guess I'm sort of not surprised, but nice to see Gonzaga finally, after all the press and all the talk they get, finally get there. And we'll see, you know, see how good they are. I saw them against St. Mary's and thought they'd be out again. But they got the right fight. But
right.
I think Oregon's going to run Gonzaga out of the gym. I just really think so. They're a more physical team. It's great to have a 6'10", 6'11", 310-pound center. But, you know, can't have a draft horse in the Kentucky Derby, right?
That's true. So you think Oregon will meet up with Gonzaga in the national championship then, huh, Dave?
Well, no. I mean, if it's Oregon, but I don't think mm-hmm. I think Gonzaga is going to get run out of the gym. All right.
Gotcha.
And I think Oregon with their frenetic defense. I mean, Oregon plays a tough defense, tough physical team.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're going to see the same crap we've seen before with Izzo's teams and some other teams. Is anybody who plays the ACC is expected to play pretty basketball in the Final Four.
Right.
And I don't think South Carolina, you know darn well, they don't play pretty basketball. It's probably the Florida game. It's probably the roughest game I've seen all year. they were letting everything go.
Right.
Compared to North Carolina, Kentucky, where it seemed like every other sentence was Kentucky, the next Kentucky player had three fouls. And I just think that Roy Williams and the way he plays, and I think what the NCAA wants at the end of the day is we're going to see some much tighter officiating in these finals than we saw in some of the Elite Eight games on the weekend. So I would say that I would predict that North Carolina will win, one, just because of bloodlines. They just have too many high-level recruits. And I just think that for whatever reason, when it comes to the Final Four, we see a different level of officiating than sometimes we see through the whole tournament. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Dave. And that's going to be something I'm going to look for as well. And that is also something I want to get off my chest as well, Isaac. When watching that North Carolina and Kentucky game, the NCAA has to make a move to six fouls. Because, you know, keeping it at five, I mean, in the way, the inconsistency, I should say, when it comes to the officiating at the collegiate level of college basketball, these kids pick up two fouls early in the game, and they're done for the first half. You don't see them until the second half, you know, and then what if they pick up their third? Then they go to the bench, you know, early in the second, and you may not see them until about 5 to 7 minutes left in the game. It's ridiculous. If you want to prepare these kids for the next level, especially some of the perennial schools out there that have that kind of next level talent, give them six fouls. It hurts the overall product. And also, comment on Gonzaga real quick before we hit this first break. You know, that's going to be a fun game to watch because South Carolina, with that pesky, in-your-face defense, that does remind you a lot of Izzo's old teams, right? Going up against a Gonzaga team that is very talented. Williams-Goss is balling out of control. You look at Jonathan Williams, who's playing a very consistent level of basketball game after game. That is going to be a very fun game. And I just think when evaluating Oregon and North Carolina, that front court is going to be a difference. And heck, it was a difference early on in that game against Kentucky. Going to be two fun matchups, though, I believe. But again, my question to our current sports listeners and viewers out there, I want to know how you view this Final Four. Are you intrigued? Are you a bit upset that the South was loaded up with UNC, with UCLA, with Kentucky, with Wichita State? Forgot to bring up the Shockers in that region as well. Do you think that they made the wrong decision here with loading up that part of the bracket? 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will chat with Mike Wilson. Mike was in the house to witness South Carolina going to the Final Four for the first time in school history. Mike Wilson writes for SEC Country. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Yeah, we've been discussing the NCAA tournament in segment A. We'll continue that in segment B as we now invite Mike Wilson to the show. South Carolina beat writer at SEC Country. Mike was in the house in New York to witness the Gamecocks getting that 77-70 dub over Florida to send SC to its very first Final Four in program history. What a story. What a team. Frank Martin. I got kind of a man crush on Frank Martin, Isaac. I mean, that dude I just love his personality. I love his swag. I love the grittiness in which he coaches. I love his background story as well. This dude was a former bouncer at a Miami nightclub, which I can totally see. I can totally see Frank Martin being a bouncer in South Beach. But what a story and what a program that has been molded by the hands of Martin. Right now, let's invite Mike Wilson to the show. Mike was out in the NY to, again, witness that dub. Mike, first off, how you doing, my friend?
Doing well. Can't complain at all. Thank you guys for having me.
Always good hearing from you. You're doing a great job out there for, of course, SEC country. Mike, just kind of take us into the atmosphere. Once the buzzer sounded in South Carolina, it sets in that this team, this school, is going to go to a stage in which they have never previously been before. What was the emotion like out in New York witnessing that?
I think it was hysteria for a large capacity. I mean, the players, of course, ran to the corner celebrating, but hearing the things they were yelling while they were on the podium, grabbing the trophy, things like, why not us? Which is, a rallying cry for so many teams this time of year, but they've certainly embraced that and said, why not us? And Zendarius Thornwell has his motto, secure the bag. He was yelling that out, and I'm just hearing him kind of yelling on the court about, ESPN said we had 80% chance to lose this game. Like we were supposed to lose this game, and they just feel on top of the world, and they understandably should. They'd never been to an Elite Eight, let alone a Final Four. Hadn't even won a game in the tournament since 1973. I mean, this is uncharted ground for the entire program, and they're celebrating like it.
And Mike, this is a coach in Frank Martin who's been the coach at South Carolina since 2012. How has he been able to turn this program into a Final Four contender? What about Frank Martin makes him special?
From a coaching standpoint, the way he coaches players on defense is the on-court element. But off the court, and I wrote a story about it yesterday, his relationship with his players is interesting. I've never been around a team where the players call a coach by the first name only.
Really?
Most of the time they refer to him as Frank. He's Frank. He's not Coach Martin. He's Frank. And that's just kind of who he is. And his players find him approachable, which, from what you see on the sideline by the bench, you'd think he's the most unapproachable human being in the history of the world. but he's instilled his personality in his program in a lot of ways. The toughness, the grit, the personality, the tenacity. And you see that with the way that they play.
Mike, you've been covering this team throughout the year. Did you have any thoughts that this team could make a deep run come March Madness time? I mean, was there any inkling, any peak at one point in the year where you said
in the first round?
In the first round, okay. And why?
So that's how I felt about this team going to the tournament. The way that I look at the tournament is always how is the team playing, not what it could be. This is the team South Carolina could be, and the team that they were in November and December, but they weren't playing like this down the stretch through February. Mm-hmm. They were kind of stumbling a little bit. Maybe the pressure of not knowing if they're going to make the tournament again, which is something they were so set on, maybe that got to them because at this point they're playing without any pressure. But no, I didn't see this coming. I didn't think they were going to make this run. I thought they were not going to make it out of the first weekend. I mean, especially with Duke being in that weekend. But this potential was there, but did I expect to see it turn from how they were playing down the stretch to this? Absolutely not.
Mike, that defensive style they play with, I mean, it is in your face, nonstop, so pesky, so frustrating for the opposition. That kind of style of defense is hard to sustain. The cardio regimen that Martin has when it comes to his players must be through the roof. How is this team able to sustain that kind of defense throughout the majority of the game?
That's a great question, honestly. I don't know if I have a great answer for it. I think a lot of it's mentality. The mentality is that they feed off seeing the other team wear down. And when it was against Duke, I think about 6 minutes left, it was still a tight game, but you could see the Duke players bickering at each other. They were starting to fight, look frustrated, throwing their arms up in the air at the refs. You could see how frustrated they were with the way South Carolina plays defense, and that just makes them do it more. It almost seems like a mind over matter situation where they say, all right, we've got these guys on the ropes, so we're going to keep pushing, and that keeps them going.
A player that I've been so intrigued about when it comes to this tourney, Mike, and he's so fun to watch, is Zendarius Thornwell. He had 26 points in that win over Florida, 7 rebounds, 2 steals, 8 of 13 from the floor. What makes Thornwell such a tough guard?
Man, it's how he gets the hoop. He shoots an alarming number of free throws, and he converts a lot of and-one type opportunities as well. But this season, his game took off with developing a jumper. Teams had to respect him doing that now. mm-hmm. Beyond just being this player who can get to the rim. But he just goes. It's a similar tenacity type situation where he gets those rebounds over guys that are taller than him. He's 6'5", and he's averaging almost 8 rebounds a game this year. Mm-hmm. You don't see that from 6'5 guards too often. I mean, Denzel Valentine being another one that averaged quite a few rebounds, but he just goes after it. But yeah, getting to the hoop is his strength, and getting to the free throw line, and he does that very, very well.
Mike, this is a team that will match up against another school that has never been to a Final Four in number one, Gonzaga. How do you think these two teams match up?
You know, Gonzaga's size is going to be an issue, I think, for South Carolina. The Gamecocks really only play 3 post players, and the third one is kind of a sparingly playing guy. And foul trouble in the paint has been one of South Carolina's issues this year. They've avoided it through the tournament, which has been key, because Chris Silva is a monster in the post, but he doesn't often play 20 minutes sometimes due to the foul trouble. Mm. If they can keep those guys on the floor, I like their chances a lot better. But that to me is the matchup that's going to matter in this game. But you know, both teams have a lot of experience. Both teams are tough, so it should be a good game.
If you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Mike Wilson, South Carolina beat writer at SEC Country. Before we get you out of here, Mike, what's the buzz like in South Carolina? First off, have you even made it back yet from New York?
I am standing in the corner of a diner on 35th Street and 7th Avenue in New York City right now. I fly back tonight.
Okay, you fly back tonight. But just as far as the buzz goes around this school, you know, heading into the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight, I mean, it's got to be off the chain. Campus has to be awry right now, right?
I mean, I've seen the videos and pictures. There are students climbing in fountains in the main areas of campus. It looks like hysteria and bedlam down there. And, they all gathered at the arena last night to welcome the team back. And that looked like quite a scene as well. And, yeah, I mean, it was the same after they made it out of last weekend, beating Duke. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a program that hasn't had basketball success in a long time anyway. They were great in the 70s, won the SEC in 97, hadn't been in the tournament since 2004. I mean, this is such new territory for them, and, you know, they're celebrating like that.
So cool. Mike, also, you know, when you evaluate this ride, it's so cool to watch, and it was so fun to watch the post-game press conference and to see the players, you know, corral around Martin and douse him with water and Gatorade. What was your favorite moment post-game when it comes to covering that team yesterday?
There were two that come to mind quickly. One was when Sindarius Stornwell walked in the locker room. We had to carve out basically a path for him to his locker. And he comes in, and I just said, like, "How you doing, Sindarius?" He goes, "Good, how are you?" It was just such a, I don't know if he was stunned in the moment or if it was just, you know, the person he is, but I just thought that was a fun little, "I'm good, how are you?" That was a good one.
Right.
Another one came from Thornwell as well when, you know, he had the net around his neck and someone asked him, you know, "When are you going to take that off?" He's like, "I don't know, I think I'm going to keep it on for a while. I think I might keep it on until practice Tuesday."
That's great stuff. Great stuff. And Mike, you know, I joked when I shot you a text after that win for South Carolina. I mean, man, Mike, you must be a good luck charm, dude, because when you were here as a beat writer at Michigan State, those were much better times than what Sparty Land is currently experiencing. Then you go to South Carolina, and my goodness, they also have a women's basketball team that will be playing later on tonight for a possible chance at making the Final Four. Got to be good for you, right, as a reporter.
Yeah, I can't claim being good luck for the women's team. They already were good, but
right.
I do like to make little jokes there. You know, Michigan State won their first Rose Bowl in 26 years, my first year, and now South Carolina's their first Final Four ever in my first year here, so... I've had friends telling me I need to cover the Lions next, but I don't think my powers are that strong.
Oh, Mike, well, you're doing a great job. Soak it up, brother. Again, Mike Wilson, South Carolina beat writer at SEC Country. Mike, thank you so much for your time, and travel safely back to SC.
You bet. Thank you, guys.
All right, let's hit our final break. When we come back, we'll put a bow on today's Current Sports by hitting you with weekend winners. We'll also briefly chat about the Detroit Pistons. Yes, there is still life left in the body, Doctor. Will the Pistons make the playoffs? That is the question. It's getting very interesting, to say the least. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. We have just under 10 minutes left in the show. If you want to call in, get a quick call in, of course, and get something off your sports noggin, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. Quick NBA talk. The Detroit Pistons, still, believe it or not, it's the NBA's Eastern Conference. Such a stout conference, I tell you. But still with the Pistons. Losers of three straight and six of seven. The Pistons are 10th in the NBA's Eastern Conference. That's a half game behind number nine, Chicago. And one game behind number eight, Miami. The Miami Heat, which I can't even believe that we're talking about the Miami Heat. Still in right now in the playoffs. What a run the Heat have made since the NBA All-Star break. I can't believe I'm chatting about the Miami Heat in the playoffs. That's the NBA's Eastern Conference for you, though. And also, I didn't make note of this, Isaac. Devin Booker, 70 points. That was like an afterthought, though. You know, it's so crazy. I saw that on my phone. I saw an ESPN update, you know, Devin Booker, 70 points, the most since Kobe Bryant's 82. They lost the game. And a lot of people forget this, too, about, you know, Michael Jordan, the greatest basketball player of all time. Jordan had 63 and lost in double overtime in the playoffs against the Boston Celtics. But Devin Booker, 70 points.
That's also lost to the Celtics, too.
He also lost to the Celtics. But that's amazing that he was able to put up 70 points, but you got to get the dub.
By far youngest player ever reached that margin. But the thing is, for me, I don't know, Al. Maybe I'm just a Scrooge, a curmudgeon on Mondays, because it seems like I always have some gripe with the sporting world. I hated seeing that. And it's not because they fouled at the end of the game to get them more points. That was an incredible performance. Yeah. Booker's going to be a great player going forward. That's not why I take issue. The reason I take issue, they posed after the game with the shot of Booker holding up a piece of paper with the number 70 adorned on it, just like Wilt Chamberlain did for 100.
Come on,
difference
man.
Is, Chamberlain won that game. You lost that game. It's 70. It's not 100. Let's show a little bit of self-respect, a little bit of dignity, and actually try to win instead of lose.
Thank you. Thank you. That's the thing. That was my next point. They were having this conversation on ESPN Radio as well this morning. The Suns, you could tell down the stretch of that game, they were trying to get Devin as many points as possible. They could care less what read in the win and loss column after the buzzer sounded in that game. And that's the problem that I had with it as well. When Jordan threw up 63 against Boston, it was in the playoff. Jordan was trying to win here. You know what I mean?
I'm sure he was sulking in the locker room afterwards.
Sure.
No other way Jordan does it.
Exactly. Jordan wouldn't have posed, you know, with the number 63 written on a sheet of paper, because they lost. They lost to the Celtics in the playoffs, dude. And then, you know, even I'm gonna stop my rant there, because I could go on a huge rant about this, but it just shows you a peek into the window of today's NBA, which I have a total problem with. And tomorrow, I saw that some very strong comments were made by a certain Houston Rockets player concerning NBA players resting. Very strong comments, which I'll address on tomorrow's Current Sports. Briefly, though, because I know we got two callers on. We're going to get them on. Mike and Ray, don't go anywhere. We're in the show with those two callers. But, Isaac, do you think the Detroit Pistons make the playoffs?
I'm going to say no right now. I'd rather actually be a team like the Dallas Mavericks or New Orleans Pelicans, who are four games out of the picture at this point. I just hate the basketball that the Pistons are playing. They aren't just losing. They are losing big. They look totally disconcerted, without identity, and they look lost to me. Other Eastern Conference teams picking it up a little bit, but no, I don't think the Pistons do, and that would have shocked me if that would have been the case before the season.
Statistically, they still have life. Again, we're talking about losers of three straight here, six of the last seven. And during this skid, the Pistons' offense is averaging a mere 92 points during this 1-6 skid, which you think was enough to win some games, right? No. It is translated into just horrible defense and losses
exactly.
Time and time again. So I don't think the Pistons are making the playoffs either, as much as it pains me to say that. And I also believe that Stan Van Gundy, I think he's losing the locker room. And I think that's even a bigger problem that we need to discuss later on this week, okay? Two callers. We've got Ray on line one. Ray from Indiana, what's on your mind?
What a great shining moment when the Bullies got beat by Oregon.
I knew Ray was going to find a way to bring up Michigan somehow, some way here on Current Sports. Yeah. Well, Ray, that was a while ago, though, man. Now,
well,
you look
I know,
at it?
I haven't called you in a while.
But, gotcha.
You know,
gotcha.
I'm still enjoying it, having a happy time about it, you know. Another broken heart. Another football team, basketball team, 10 years. I just called the bullies up, and they started putting tape machines on me, so I just said, God bless you. I hope you can humble yourselves. I'm ready to meet you halfway when you're ready. That's about all I said, sir.
Well,
they're
Ray,
going to take me to court for that? Let them go ahead.
Ray, well, Ray, you got to give props where props are due, because John Beilein, to get the Michigan Wolverines to a Sweet 16 appearance, that was pretty impressive. Would you admit that, Ray? That was impressive. That was an impressive run.
Let's go back to the whole thing, okay? Back to the airplane wreck, okay?
Oh, goodness.
The Purdue game, they miss a 1-1 free throw. They don't win that game if it wasn't for the guy missing the free throw, okay? Then you go to the tournament. Oklahoma State could have easily beat them. So could Louisville. They run out of luck, sir. They run out of luck. They call themselves a great team down there. They're not a great team. They're a good team, but they're not a great team.
Ray, we got to go. Thanks for the call, my man.
Bless you, buddy.
Mike from Saginaw. Mike, we only got 30 seconds. What's on your mind, brother?
Okay, man. The Michigan High School got a great future ahead of us. You know, we got Foster Lawyer. We got Romeo Wings out of New Haven. We got the Johnson kid from Benton Harbor. And I didn't even mention the Lansing kids, so we got some sick juniors coming up soon in Michigan. So I assume Michigan. And also, Tillman, I forgot to mention him for Grand Rapids. Chris. So
right,
I thought I'd just kick them all in there.
Yeah, hey, great job, Mike. That was a good job there. Now, yeah, and I think, you know, you're looking at, you know, Xavier Tillman and Foster Lawyer, who they were a joy to watch this past weekend. MSU basketball fans, if Miles Bridges decides to go to the NBA, this team has a very bright future regardless. Okay, Xavier Tillman, got a chance to check him out over the weekend. He looks great, big body. He's got a college-bound body already. You know, he's a senior at Grand Rapids Christian. I'm excited about watching him in a green and white jersey next year. But in 2 years, Foster Lawyer, who I'm even more pumped about Lawyer, Isaac. I don't know if you've seen this kid play. He's already got a goatee. He's a junior in high school, can straight up ball. I mean, the dude had 29 points, 5 boards, 3 assists in that state championship win for Clarkson and for legendary coach Dan Fife. Just very cool to watch him ball out. So we'll elaborate more on that on tomorrow's Current Sports. Thanks for listening, folks. Same time, same place tomorrow. I'm Al Martin, and be easy, people.